What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
The last few years have seen an avalanche of anti-trans legislation across the country and an uptick in violence against trans bodies. November 20th, today, is Transgender Awareness Day. Joining us to discuss is Honey Mahogany, a founder of San Francisco's Transgender District, a co-owner of the Stud Bar, and currently works as the director of the Office of Trans Initiatives in San Francisco. Good morning, Honey.
Morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. Honey, I want to start with the origin story of Transgender Remembrance Day. Can you walk us through it?
Sure. I mean, I think that Transgender Day of Remembrance was really a way for the community to acknowledge the tremendous loss that we experience and the risks that we take by just being ourselves, living our authentic lives. Trans people are disproportionately targeted by violence. They're disproportionately impacted by poverty and homelessness. And the job opportunities for trans people historically have been really relegated to very, very few spaces. And so we wanted to bring light to the fact that we are human beings trying to survive in this world, and there's a lot that's working against us, and we need to start talking about it because, you know, as we've seen throughout history with social justice movements, with movements for equality, being able to tell our stories and acknowledging the reality of our experiences is a really important part of actually achieving equity.
Honey, in the prep for the show, I read that the day was founded in 1999 by Gwendolyn Ann Smith in order to honor Rita Hester. Can you tell us about who those women were?
You know what? You know a little bit more about that than I do. I don't actually know very much about the founding of Transgender Day of Remembrance.
Okay. Well, I will just say, founded in 1999 in order to honor Rita Hester, a transgender African-American woman who was killed in Massachusetts, founded by Gwendolyn Ann Smith, a transgender activist and writer. Honey, when you talk about the violence that trans folks live with, can you talk about how that upticks, particularly for Black trans folks?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, when you look at the here in the United States, we've lost 29 people in this last year. And globally, that number is actually 350 people that we know of individuals who identified as trans and non-binary and gender non-conforming. So we had 350 this year. Last year, there were 321. So we've seen an increase over this last year. And 93% of those people who passed away globally were Black or brown trans people. And that's, again, a 14% increase from last year.
You're in San Francisco, a place that folks look at as a safe place for queer folks, gay folks, trans folks. It is also a place that has swung to the right in the last couple of years. Has that shifted the way you feel or trans folks in San Francisco feel moving through your city?
I think that trans people are always, again, amongst the most vulnerable in our society. And so, you know, certain policies specifically around policing really tend to impact the trans community the most. So in that way, you know, I will see that the trans community, especially the most vulnerable, poor trans people, Black and brown trans people, Indigenous trans people who are immigrants, trans people who may be undocumented, do suffer at the brunt of a lot of those policies. But I will say that, you know, here in San Francisco, even though there has been a shift to the right, I think socially in many ways, we are still a very progressive place. And so, you know, even as we have, you know, potentially, you know, more moderate Democrats, you know, in office here in San Francisco, I believe all of them fully support trans equality.
Let's talk about the federal level. Things were tough under a Democratic president. As I mentioned in the introduction, we've seen an avalanche of anti-trans legislation not only be introduced but passed. How do you expect things to shift under a Trump presidency, and what ways is your community preparing?
Well, I think it's obvious to everyone that the Republican Party specifically has latched onto this idea that using the trans community as a wedge issue is a good idea. And, you know, I guess we shouldn't be surprised by that. I think trans people have been the canary in the coal mine in a lot of ways. You know, that certainly happened during World War II, you know, the 1920s and 30s, trans people were actually gaining rights and recognition. In Germany, actually, you actually could get an ID card that identified you as a trans person, and that allowed you to move through society as your the gender with which you presented. And that all changed when the fascist Nazi party took over, right? And they started, you know, putting people in concentration camps and experimenting on people and killing people. You know, things haven't gotten quite there yet, but what we are seeing is a real targeting of trans people. And, you know, when it didn't work one way with, the bathroom bans or, you know, attacking drag queens, then it became about sports. So it, you know, there's always a way of finding an issue that they feel like they can use as a cudgel, something that can, you know, make people feel afraid or unbalanced, or maybe something that people aren't familiar with. And, you know, trans people are only 2-3% of the population. So it's very easy to target them and assume that many people might not even know a trans person. That being said, I think that they have been successful in introducing a lot of legislation across this country that targets our community. In fact, I believe even now there are something like 70 or 80 federal bills that specifically are aimed at reducing the rights of transgender people in this country. And certainly we have heard the rhetoric from, you know, Trump himself. We've heard the rhetoric from Republican governors and representatives across this country. Targeting trans people, demonizing trans people, saying that we are, that we're going to commit violence against people, or that we are, you know, converting people to become trans, or forcing people to receive, you know, gender reassignment surgeries, things like that. And all of these things are not true. We're just people who want to live our lives. And so I think that there is grave concern for what will happen under a Trump presidency. I think, you know, many of us here in San Francisco and in California feel very lucky that we are in a sanctuary state, within a sanctuary city, that we have leaders like Gavin Newsom who have stepped up and said that they're gonna find ways to really Trump-proof California. And of course the state legislature, which I know is gonna be also hosting special legislative sessions to discuss how they can protect us here in California and here in San Francisco.
Honey Mahogany, you talked about the rhetoric that we've heard from Trump and the Republican Party. As a comms person, I know that rhetoric impacts public narrative, and public narrative impacts realities on the streets. Can you talk about the pipeline of violence from what is said on a stage to what trans folks experience in day-to-day reality?
Well, I mean, if you just look at the statistics, I mean, when you talk about people who specifically are young people, right? Many of our young people who live in states where there are either bans on healthcare, or there's been legislation that's been introduced that tries to ban their healthcare or them being able to play sports or accessing bathrooms or any of those things. We've seen a dramatic increase in the in suicidality, in depression. You know, I think it's something like 71% increase in those metrics for trans youth who live in those types of states. So, there is a very real consequence to proliferating those kinds of talking points. And we know that when politicians say these kinds of things publicly and use these as their platforms with which they run for office, that turns into, you know, kids hear that those things, and that turns into people being teased on the playground, that turns into people feeling unsafe in their homes sometimes, and also in their schools. You know, when Trump was elected, there was a 400% increase in the number of calls placed to the Trevor Project or to Trans Lifeline, because people were really legitimately scared, and it impacted their mental health.
Honey Mahogany, you are one of the founders of San Francisco's Transgender District. What is the district? What kind of services exist there? How was it founded and why? Tell the story.
Yes. Well, the Transgender District was a really special project. It really came out of wanting to acknowledge the existence of trans people in San Francisco, to celebrate our history and our rich legacy in the city, and also to prevent and stem the tide of displacement that we saw of trans people from the Tenderloin. You know, the Tenderloin historically has been basically a containment zone. It was a place where, you know, certain things and activities were able to exist and happen. You know, it's been a place where a lot of, you know, the sort of, you know, during Prohibition, it's where they were a lot of speakeasies and places where you could get alcohol. You know, it's been known for, you know, the substance use and drug, the proliferation of drug sales. But it's also one of San Francisco's oldest queer neighborhoods because, you know, we used to have public decency laws here in the city that would ban people from presenting as queer or trans in public. But in the Tenderloin, you know, that was sort of ignored and people could be themselves. And so there's been this real concentration of trans people historically in the Tenderloin for decades. And, you know, as San Francisco has changed, as it continues to grow and develop, a lot of our Black and brown folks, our trans folks, our low income and working class folks have all been pushed out of the city. And of course, you know, again, many of the people who are low income, who may be on government subsidies, who may be disabled, this really impacts them. And so we wanted to make sure that as the city continues to develop, continues to change, continues to build more housing, that we do so in a way that also ensures that we are not pushing out our most vulnerable residents. And that's why we founded the Transgender District. Over the last few years, the Transgender District has done a variety of things. I mean, first and foremost, it has done placemaking, which is really important. We want to make sure that people know that we're here. We want to serve as a beacon of light and of hope to people across the country. And I think that the Transgender District has done that. In addition to that, though, the Transgender District has run, for example, rental subsidy programs in the past. It has a job training and entrepreneurship program where, you know, companies like Fluid Coffee and Heart and Electrolysis here in San Francisco all got their start through the Transgender District's entrepreneurship program. It also has done ad campaigns, including the Know Our Place campaign, which was by trans people for trans people. It was part one of the thought partners around Trans History Month. It's done a lot of different things to really, I think, empower the community and bring people together. But it also does things like holding name change clinics, name and gender change clinics to help people navigate that process, which can be complicated and daunting to people. So it does a lot of things that I think really span the spectrum of the trans experience.
Thank you, Honey Mahogany. You are also the director of the Office of Trans Initiatives in San Francisco. What is that office and what work are you engaged in there?
Yes, the Office of Transgender Initiatives exists basically to serve as a bridge and a door between the community and local government. We are very much in touch with the mayor's office, the legislative branch, the board of supervisors, and also our city departments, helping advise on policy decisions that impact the trans community and also advising on the city's budget, which is a huge way in which we are able to create change and create equity. Currently, we operate a variety of programs or have been behind a variety of programs, including the city's chosen name and gender policies. We also work with City College around some of those issues. We have currently, our biggest initiative is the Ending Trans Homelessness Initiative, where we have worked with the Department of Homelessness, the Department of Public Health, the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development, and other city departments to really look at the ways in which the city is providing homelessness services, housing services, and support, and ensuring that there is equitable access for trans people. In addition to that, we have, you know, we helped get a trans navigation center opened here in San Francisco for the those who are unhoused and trans. And yes, there's a variety of things that we do, including actually providing training. So we provide trainings for city departments, but we also recently provided a whole set of trainings for city contractors, specifically those working with the city on housing. So we really want to ensure that that we reduce the number of barriers that trans people experience when they're seeking help.
We're having this conversation today, honey, because it is Trans Remembrance Day. What is happening in San Francisco today?
So we are, there's a couple things that are happening today. One is that we are having a, basically a memorial and a march. So the speaking program will start at City Hall at 5 p.m. and then we'll be marching over to the SFLGBT Center at 6:30 p.m. from City Hall. And afterward, the transgender district will be hosting a sort of, a decompression party afterwards at the Academy on Market Street.
What does being an accomplice to trans folks mean in this political moment?
I think, you know, right now, trans people definitely need allyship, support, and accomplices. We are such a small portion of the community, and we could not do this work alone or achieve liberation without the support of our allies and accomplices. And I think it's really important that we acknowledge that, you know, we are trans people are on the front lines, but, you know, today it's us and tomorrow it's somebody else. It could be you, it could be your neighbors. And so we really rely on, again, building allyship, building accomplices, working together, building bridges, because I think that, you know, what the right has really been successful at is dividing us, turning us against each other to distract from the fact that they're the ones that are robbing us blind this entire time. So if we, you know, can set aside our differences as minority communities, as those who are disenfranchised by the current system that we have in place here in this country, I think that we could really achieve a lot. And I think that's what they're most afraid of. So that support can look a whole bunch of different ways. I mean, certainly it means organizing the streets with us. Certainly if you have the means, it means donating to trans-serving organizations, especially right now at a time where, you know, in the next couple of months, federal funding could dry up or be eliminated, or, you know, there could be severe consequences for service providers who continue to provide trans services. So now would be the time to certainly give your money to organizations like Lion Martin or TGIJP or Lyric, our LGBTQ youth organization here in the city, Ella para Trans Latinas, which works with undocumented trans women. And, you know, so that's going to be, again, they're at sort of the forefront of two of the main scapegoats, right? The two of the main communities that are under attack right now. And there's also the Center for Immigrant Protection. So all of these organizations, and and there are many more that do work with the trans community here, you know, will need not just funding to replace potentially federal funding or other grants that may dry up, but also in order to deal with the influx of people that we are anticipating will come to places like San Francisco and the Bay Area because they are being pushed out of their home states or hometowns. So those are a few of the ways in which people can be allies. Obviously also, being involved in politics, both at the local election, statewide, and federal. It's really important to know who's on the ballot, what's on the ballot, and vote accordingly. Vote if someone is transphobic or is not openly supporting trans people, you know, make sure to consider voting for their opponent. You know, we have to really be strategic here. We have to really educate ourselves here, because there's a lot of people that are working very hard to make sure that we are not educated, that we are divided, and that we don't make it into that voting booth. So that's one of the most important ways in which we can make a difference, and we can be allies to each other.
Honey, powerful words to end on. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.